Good morning, human rights activists all over the world. Welcome back to Communication Workers of America, CWA Human Rights, Our Power, a Justice Field Hour of Talk, Solidarity, and Worker Power right here on KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you are visiting the beautiful city of Houston, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Listen and subscribe to us every Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Central on kyokradio.org, on our CWA Strong app, or your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser. Search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. Thank you for joining us on the CWA Human Rights Our Power radio show this morning. It's about us. That's right. It's about us. Working agreement, solidarity, living wages, worker power, and simply human rights. Honk your horns, everybody, if you support workers. Save the Civil Service rally on February 11th. Rally to Save the Civil Service will take place on Tuesday, February 11th, 2025, 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's a lunchtime rally. Join AFGE President Everett Kelly, members of the Congress, labor leaders, and coalition partners to rally in defense of the nonpartisan professional civil service, where Upper Senate Park, Constitution Avenue, Delaware Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C., American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. Mark your calendars again, Tuesday, February 11, 2025, 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. It's a lunchtime rally. We have a phenomenal show lineup with Mykia Jones, Sir Reginald Small, Timia Wiley, and Tay Akins this morning. So don't you dare change that dial. Tune in because it's Black History Month. We're spotlighting our own. We have T for Tay, and we're going to be talking about the impact and the impacted with all of these new actions and policies from the new administration. Our union voices are ringing in every district from Alaska to Maine, Texas to Minnesota, Canada to Puerto Rico, because we don't play at CWA. Our union brothers, sisters, and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette have been outside for 26 months striking on the picket lines. And yet while they're striking, they are still churning out the news with facts for you and me. Let's show our support to them by making sure we subscribe to unionprogress.com. And once you subscribe to unionprogress.com, how about going over and donating to their strike fund? Donate at cwa.org/PPG-donate. And I just heard someone shout, "When we fight, we win." Just keep that in your spirit. You're tuned in to KYOK 1140 AM and the all new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on KYOKradio.org. Today, we highlight and honor the legacy of a woman whose courage and dedication changed the course of history. Daisy Bates was not just a leader, she was a force, a beacon of resilience in the fight for civil rights, human rights, women's rights, and labor rights. Her life's work serves as an enduring reminder that the struggle for equality is not won by words alone, but by action, sacrifice, and unwavering determination. Daisy Bates was born November 11, 1914, in Hootick, Arkansas. She did not follow a traditional educational path, but was largely self-educated. She later attended Shorter College, a historically Black college in North Little Rock, Arkansas. Although she did not obtain a formal degree, her extensive knowledge, leadership, and passion for justice positioned her as one of the most influential figures in American history. Daisy Bates was a journalist, publisher, and civil rights activist. Alongside her husband, L.C. Bates, she co-founded and operated the Arkansas State Press, one of the few Black-owned newspapers in the South. This publication became a powerful voice against segregation and racial injustice, highlighting issues that mainstream white newspapers ignored. She is best known for her pivotal role in the desegregation of public schools. As president of the Arkansas chapter of the NAACP, she became a figure in the battle to integrate Little Rock Central High School in 1957. When nine courageous Black students, now known as the Little Rock Nine, faced hostility and violence in their attempt to enter the school. It was Daisy Bates who stood beside them. Her home became a safe haven for these young pioneers. a place where they found guidance, strength, and protection from the relentless attacks of white supremacists. Despite the threats, intimidation, and even the loss of her newspaper due to economic pressure, she never wavered. Her commitment helped to pave the way for the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and laid the groundwork for the dismantling of segregation nationwide. Daisy Bates understood the fight for civil rights was part of a larger struggle for human rights. She believed that no person, regardless of race, gender, or economic status, should be denied dignity and opportunity. Her work extended beyond school integration. She was a fierce advocate for fair housing, voting rights, economic justice. She worked tirelessly to dismantle systems of oppression that dehumanized Black Americans and other marginalized communities. Her activism aligned with global movements for human rights, standing in solidarity with those who fought against apartheid in South Africa and those who sought justice in other parts of the world. She recognized that the denial of education, employment, and basic freedoms was a violation of fundamental human rights and used her platform to demand change. As a Black woman in a male-dominated movement, Daisy Bates faced not only racial discrimination, but also gender bias. Yet she refused to be sidelined. She carved out her own leadership role in the civil rights movement, proving that women were not just supporters, but leaders in their own right. She fought for the rights of Black women, advocating for their inclusion in leadership positions and ensuring their voices were heard. Her newspaper was one of the few that highlighted the stories of Black women and their struggles, showcasing their contributions to society and the movement. By breaking barriers, Daisy Bates inspired generations of women to lead, organize, and demand equality, not only in a racial justice movement, but in a broader fight for gender equality. Daisy Bates also understood that true equality could not be achieved without economic justice. She was a staunch advocate for labor rights, recognizing that Black workers face both racial and economic oppression. She fought for fair wages, equal employment opportunities, and the right of Black workers to unionize without fear of retaliation. Her work intersected with the labor movement, supporting Black workers in their demand for dignity in the workplace. She knew that racial justice and labor justice were intertwined. Without economic empowerment, Black families would continue to be trapped in cycles of poverty and discrimination. Daisy Bates' legacy is one of courage, resistance, and unwavering commitment to justice. She did not wait for change. She demanded it. She did not retreat in the face of adversity. She confronted it head on. Her fight for civil rights, human rights, women rights, and labor rights continues to inspire us today. Her contributions did not go unnoticed. In 1963, she was invited to speak at the historic March on Washington, one of the few women given that honor. And later in life, she continued her advocacy work and received numerous accolades, including being recognized by President Bill Clinton. On November 4th, 1999, Daisy Bates passed away in Little Rock, Arkansas, but her impact remains alive in the ongoing fight for justice. As we honor her memory, let us carry forward her mission. Let us speak truth to power, stand up for the marginalized, and never be afraid to fight for what is right. Daisy Bates showed us that one person's dedication can transform a nation. It is now our responsibility to continue that work to ensure that her sacrifices were not in vain and that justice and equality prevail for all. You are tuned into KYOK 1140 AM in the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Listen and subscribe every Thursday morning, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Central on kyokradio.org. Or on the CWA Strong app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Radio, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser. Search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. Next, we have Makia Jones discussing Black History Month, focusing on the accomplishments of Black Americans, both past and present, as well as looking toward the future. Good morning, Makia.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, KYOK radio listeners. And yes, I'm excited. It is February, which means it is National African American History Month. Yay! So, National African American History Month has its origins in 1915 when historian and author Dr. Carter G. Woodson founded the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History. This organization is now known as the Association for the Study of African American Life and History. Through this organization, Dr. Woodson initiated the first Negro History Week in February 1926, and he selected the week in February because it included the birthdays of Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass, which were two key figures in the history of Black Americans. And in 1975, President Ford issued a message on the observance of Black History Week, urging all Americans to recognize the important contribution made to our nation's life and culture by Black citizens. And in 1976, sorry, ASALH expanded this commemoration of Black history in the United States from a week-long observance to Black History Month, which also has been known as African American History Month. Now, in subsequent years, presidents continued to issue messages honoring Black History Month. In 1986, Congress passed Public Law 99-244, which designated February as National Black Afro-American History Month. And this law noted that February 1st, 1986, would mark the beginning of the 60th annual public and private salute to Black history. So, since 1996, presidents have issued annual proclamations for National Black History Month. And in 1996, President Clinton issued a presidential proclamation, 6863, for National African American History Month. And it emphasized the theme for that year, which was the achievements of Black women from Sojourner Truth to Mary McLeod Bethune and Toni Morrison. Since then, Congress has regularly passed resolutions honoring Black History Month and the contributions of Black Americans throughout. So Black History Month is more important than ever today because it serves as a dedicated time to recognize and celebrate the contributions of African Americans throughout history, highlighting their achievements in various fields, while also acknowledging the struggles we have faced and continue to face right now. It prompts ongoing discussions and conversations about systemic racism and the need for continued progress towards equality. It's a crucial opportunity to educate people about African American history beyond just stories of slavery and promote understanding of Black culture and experiences across generations. African American history is American history, is world history, and it needs to be honored, celebrated, and told. Happy African American History Month, everyone.
Thank you so much, Makia, for enlightening us on Black History Month. When we fight, we win. Next up, we have Tea with Tay, and Tea will be spilling some Tay will be spilling some tea this morning. We're going to be talking about the actions and policies of the new administration and how they impact the impacted. Good morning, Tay. How are you?
Good morning, KYOK listeners and Union family. Welcome to Tea with Tay, where we sip, spill, and serve the real. Today's tea, as Errol stated, we will be discussing the recent actions and policy changes from the new administration, what they mean, who they impact, and why you should care. Right now, we're seeing some of the most aggressive policy changes in modern history rolling out under Project 2025. A political agenda designed to completely reshape the world we live in today, and not in a good way. These policies are targeting civil rights, labor protection, LGBTQ plus communities, women's rights, and racial equality efforts. So let's talk about what's happening, who's getting hit the hardest, and what we can do about it. Grab your tea because today this one is hot. Let's talk about some of the recent policy changes. Before we unpack all the chaos, let's break it down. What are these policy changes under the new administration? These policy changes tell federal agencies how to enforce existing laws. Unlike laws passed by Congress, these new policies from the new administration do not require approval from the House or the Senate. But here's some things that re here, I'm sorry, but here's some things these recent actions and policy changes have have real power. They can change how civil rights laws are enforced, redirect government funding, reshape federal policies on immigration, labor, and education. The Supreme Court can strike them down, and Congress can pass laws to override them. But let's just be real. That doesn't happen overnight, and by the time the courts or Congress react, millions of people's lives will already have changed. Millions of people will already be affected, and that's exactly what's happening right now under Project 2025. And you all remember when the conversation was had that Project 2025 was not real.
And not
So,
only the Project 2025, Tate, you're talking about that, but then we also must talk about the attack on DEI, which is diversity, equity, and inclusion. And if we remember, many companies that prioritize diversity, equity, and inclusion, they've experienced significant benefits from actively engaging with the BIPOC community and marginalized communities. And then these communities bring unique perspectives, experiences, and talents that enriched workplace culture and drove innovation. Then suddenly, because of pressures, monetary pressures, I might add, all of these policies begin to change. And I just want to say right here, and then I'm gonna go bring in our special guest this morning that's on, going to be a part of Tea with Tay. I want to say this: DEI does not mean hiring unqualified individuals. It means promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion while also ensuring that candidates meet the necessary qualifications for the job. And today, we are just overjoyed. We are honored to welcome Lieutenant Colonel Carl Wiley, a distinguished individual who earned his wings as a Black Hawk helicopter pilot. His journey to becoming a pilot is filled with dedication, rigorous training, and a passion for aviation. As a Black Hawk pilot, Mr. Wiley has not only mastered the technical skills required to operate the sophisticated aircraft, but has also played a vital role in various missions, showcasing his commitment to service and excellence in the field. We look forward to hearing from him, and we're bringing him on right now. Good morning, Mr. Wiley. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning. Good morning to you and to everyone on the call. Thanks for having me.
Now, we must go ahead and let everyone know you are the father of one of our hosts, which is absent. She's flying somewhere in the country today. And that is our very own Timia Wiley. And so we're not going to tell you what she's told us about you, but just know we have gotten some laughs.
Yes, Timmy is my dear daughter, and she has followed me around the world, even took some childhood parachute training.
Oh, she didn't tell us that. Now, can you share your journey to becoming a Black Hawk pilot and a lieutenant colonel, and what inspired you to serve, and what challenges did you overcome along the way?
Okay, I will keep it brief. What inspired me was at the age of about 9 or 10, my parents received a knock at the door, and it was a knock from an individual to notify them that my second oldest brother had been wounded in Vietnam. And they would come back later and tell us that he was evacuated to Walter Reed. We went to visit him at Walter Reed, and the carnage that I saw there led me to what I wanted to be when I grew up. Over the next many, many years, I prayed about it. And I can honestly say that everything that I asked God for, He allowed me to do. And in addition to that, my oldest brother was also in Vietnam, who was a cavalryman.
So, as a Black officer in the military, how have diversity, equity, and inclusion policies impacted your career and the careers of others like you? And what do you say to those who believe DEI is unnecessary?
Let's say that the way I experienced it, I have to say it's justice, It's equity, it's diversity, it's inclusion, and it's accessibility. All of those combined for me in my career to allow me to have the opportunity to be a pilot. Now, education, skills, et cetera, play into that. But being a minority officer is more than sitting in the cockpit. It allowed me to bring my experiences as a farmer, to bring my experiences as a African American, and to learn the skill sets that I would use to then help educate others that come behind me, like we're doing here today. So, what people I would ask people to understand is what the young lady said before. African American history is world history. I've seen that by operating around the world. And there's no better feeling than sitting in that cockpit and looking to your left seat, right seater, or in the back for that medic. And you don't see color. You see someone that is able to operate. Being in that cockpit, being in the environment allows us to take those skill sets back and educate and improve our communities. If you're a banker and you've never been poor, you've never been a single parent, and you're working two jobs, you can't understand the reality of it.
Now, we have seen these actions and policies in the new administration. They're now shaping military policies, hiring practices, and veteran benefits. How have past or these recent actions affected the service members, especially those from marginalized backgrounds?
So I've been out of the military for a number of years. I also retired as a civil servant in 2019. So I won't speak on how it's impacting this current people that are serving because I'm not a current, but I will say it off or say it based on 40 years of experience in Department of Defense. It affects the nation. Not just the people, it affects the nation because the nation must have an operating force. It must have operating leaders from all backgrounds and races so that they can operate in the best balanced environment that they can. Our nation has a history of negating, especially African Americans on the war front or in the executive rooms. And then when they are needed, i.e. shortages of people, they come then and say, hey, we need you to help us fight. We are in 2025. We should not be having that discussion. So it is imperative that we, African Americans, we read, we understand, don't turn the TV off, read and understand so that when you hear things, understand truth from reality and take action.
Thank you so much. Now, let me. I have about two more questions, and I know this we're going a little bit longer on this segment, but the conversation is just awesome, and it's going to lead to another segue in just a moment. But for young Black and Brown individuals considering military service or leadership roles, what advice would you give them about how they can navigate the challenges and make an impact?
They navigate the challenge by number one, getting the proper education. And number two, understanding that you have to have an understanding that people are people and you have to be and the last thing, I can't think of the word, but the last thing is you always have to be willing to learn and speak your opinion in an educated way.
Thank you so much. Now, my last thing, looking back at your career, what legacy do you hope to leave behind? And what's one message you'd like our listeners to take away from your journey and today's conversation?
Listen to this very carefully. Step outside of the envelope that you are in today. This is no longer a world of the United States. We now operate in a worldly environment. Go see the world, don't be afraid, and do not let anyone or anything they say tell you that you cannot be what you want to be. You may not get there, but it's on you to not at least try.
And thank you so much, Lieutenant Colonel Carl Wiley, the father of Timmy Wiley, one of our hosts here on CWA, Our Power Radio Show. Thank you again, sir.
You are very welcome.
All right. And back to you, Tay. Let's get back into that since we jumped into the attack on DEI and all of the actions and policies that are going on in the administration. And we just saw and heard from Mr. Lieutenant, I should say Lieutenant Colonel Carl Wiley. And you can tell he was qualified for the position.
So, and that's what we want to kind of highlight on is DEI gives access and the opportunity to all individuals who have may been overlooked, who may have been overlooked already. So DEI, it sometimes people feel as if, it is not important. Well, it is very important because again, you have skilled African Americans, Black people, but they're overlooked simply because of that. They're African American, Black people, or brown people, or LGBTQ plus. Like, they're overlooked for many reasons. And these policy changes, they're attacking these things. The recent policy changes, let's talk about what's happening right now. Today, within these last few weeks, the eliminating on the federal DEI programs, the LGBTQ plus women and women rights under attack right now, with the healthcare protections for trans people rollback, the access to reproduction healthcare slashed, religion's freedom is being used as a weapon to deny service, employment, legal protections, again, to the LGBTQ plus individuals and women. So those are some of the things, and I know we're going to have our open discussion and we're going to talk about some of the policy changes, or the actions from the recent administration, but those are just a few of the recent changes to highlight. Did I miss any? Does anyone want to jump in and talk about any that I may have missed that are very important?
No, you're doing just awesome with this because what's going on is these actions and policies are reshaping America, and they're reshaping the thought processes of how things have been done in the past. And there is an attack, like I heard someone say on yesterday when I was taking her notes, was that our human rights are being taken away. Regardless of who is in power, we must remain steadfast and vigilant in the work that we do, because this is a war on workers and the union. How in the world do you think you can fire employees at will?
I mean, Errol, you said a mouthful, and certainly Mr. Wiley has said, I mean, he spoke some profound things, and one of the words that he actually used was accessibility. And I never heard it put so in that way, that these rollbacks or these things were put in place for, like, for instance, DEI was actually put in place and its accessibility. We already know, common sense tells us that these people are qualified. There is more than one group of people qualified to do any job that we could even mention. But over history, the accessibility has been denied to these people. So I was so glad that he actually said that. And Errol, I think this is a great time. We actually have another guest on our show today. So I think this is a wonderful time to bring her in on this discussion. We have one of our own with us today, one of our own human rights activists, Miss Elizabeth Mercado, who's going to join in with us. And just before we get into the meat of it, I would like to properly introduce her because she does warrant an introduction. Elizabeth began her career at Bell Atlantic, now known as Verizon, in 1998, while she was her first while this was her first union job. It was definitely not her first exposure to unions. She grew up in a union household. She learned the history, the importance, the significance, and the value that union brings to working class families and to this country. She's been motivated by a desire to address workplace inequities. Listen to that. She's motivated by the desire to address workplace inequities. We need about 10 more of her for every single hour of every single day. She has become an active advocate. She has been a chief steward. She's come through the ranks. She rose as to an executive board member, and she's now the staff assistant for Local 1101 in New York City. A shout out to Local 1101 today. In addition to her great union work, Elizabeth is deeply committed to her family and her community. In 2014, she became the first Puerto Rican woman to run for and serve as president locally for her school board. She's a part of the Coalition of Labor Union Women, the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement, from whom she has participated in and completed a fellowship program in 2024. She also serves on the executive board of the Islip Town branch of the NAACP. She wears many hats. She is very, very active in our human rights department, and she has also served our union in that human rights department as the chair of the Women's Committee. And so, without any further ado, I want to welcome Liz to the show. And I want the K. I'm going to set the stage here so that the KYOK radio listeners understand a little bit how we do things within CWA. Each year, or every other year, should I say, all of our committee members actually create a report of a subject matter that we're passionate about or interested in, or a subject matter that is important at the time. And we write those reports, we spend a lot of time on those reports, and we present those reports to the delegates at our national convention. Those reports are received by the convention, and that becomes a commitment with through those reports of what we will be pressing towards, trying to make a mark on, and create action around. And this year, Elizabeth has created a report that centers around a very popular topic from last year. And believe it or not, the topic is not dead. It is Project 25 and its impact on civil rights and women's rights, healthcare, and labor unions. And so, because she's created this report, it goes really well with today's topic, even though these topics can sometimes be controversial. They're very important topics because we do believe in education here. So I'm going to hush up just a little bit, Elizabeth, and I'm going to let you speak and present your report to us. And again, Elizabeth, welcome to KYOK Radio this morning.
Good morning. Good morning, KYO. Thank you, Reginald. And good morning, KYOK listeners, my union siblings, and as Errol mentioned before, the world, right? Because we're here to provide great information and educate. And I'm excited to be here. I'm nervous, but I am excited to be here. So so my project, as Reginald mentioned, my every year we take on a new project and write a report, and then ultimately wind up doing some actions around that report. My project this year is, in fact, taking on Project 2025 and, educating on memberships and on its impact, right? How Project 2025 is going to impact civil rights, women's rights, healthcare, and labor unions. As we know, Project 2025 does pose significant threats to various aspects of American society, including those topics that I've already mentioned. It does introduce a set of policies that could roll back decades of progress that we have all worked towards in order to maintain at this point, right? It exacerbates inequality and definitely harms marginalized communities, particularly women, workers, racial minorities, right? And as we've seen over the past few weeks, from with the recent changes from the current administration, Project 2025 is in fact, taking effect and it's starting to have devastating impacts on this country. I'm going to go ahead and continue with DEI at this point, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and accessibility. And I want to thank Lieutenant Colonel Wiley for that, because accessibility is an important part of the DEI initiative, right? It ultimately ensures that all individuals, regardless of their abilities or disabilities or any other challenges, do have equal access to opportunities, resources, and participation, whether it be in your workplace, your educational institutions, or society as a whole. As DEI is being dismantled, it is, like I mentioned before, having devastating impacts on society as we speak right now.
And Liz, and you're absolutely right. I mean, the topic of DEI, you're hearing it everywhere. And for one moment, and we've said this on the show, it became like it was such a bad word. But in your report, you talk about dismantling DEI programs. And it's just when I think about some of the results of dismantling a program, it makes me think that that leaves some people so totally unprotected. I mean, it the protections that were put in the workplace, the education that some governments, cities, companies started using with DEI, education was the first part of it so that we could understand what was necessary. And to roll that back, it leaves a vulnerable population, in some cases, very much so unprotected. And we're seeing that a lot. We have certain groups of people that are actually now, I mean, in some ways going into hiding. They don't feel protected. They don't feel part of our society, which is the inclusive piece. The inclusive piece is a feeling. And what American, what worker, what person that's going to work every day doesn't want to feel included? I think that's the dangerous part of it. And I know your report has so many other topics, so we're anxious to hear.
Thank you. But yes, you're absolutely right. There's, a lot of people being impacted by the dismantling of DEI, and I wish we had, a few more hours to talk about that, because we have lots of material
And we do. We have plenty of hours to talk about. I'm glad you said that. And that's why we're here on the show, because it's important to educate, right? A lot of times, like Reggie said, we'll hear a word or a term and we'll just go based off of whatever the media or society or whatever is telling us in that time, right? And we'll just go with it. And we don't take the time to just educate ourselves on what it really means, how, and that's why we call this segment the impact and the impacted, because we never take the time to realize the impact that that term has on society, and then who in society is impacted by that term or the lack thereof. And it's super important for us to remain educated and vigilant in educating our listeners and our activists and just each other on what these things really mean and how they can actually affect us.
Thank you, Maikia. I'm going to, part of my topic, like I mentioned before, was civil rights and minority groups, women's rights. So I'm going to just go right to the top, right? So again, one of the most concerning aspects of Project 2025 is its potential to undermine civil rights protections for minority groups. As we all know, the proposed policies target the very foundation of social justice progress that's been made over decades, right? The initiative does call for removing key terms such as Tay mentioned before, and Arrow Wolf mentioned, right? Your sexual orientation, gender identity. It affects women's reproductive health and diversity from all standpoints. It would absolutely effectively erase, well, ineffectively erase federal protections for LGBTQ individuals, women, and racial minorities. It just poses threats to our society as a whole.
So, Liz,
oh, go ahead, Tay.
Something I want to highlight is, as we talk about the recent changes or the recent actions, you don't hear anything good happening. You hear nothing good coming of these things. So I think that, yes, it is an attack on the people. It is definitely an attack on the people, because what we are supposed to be doing when it comes to the world we live in is making it a better place. We had things put into place to help us. Why are those the first things that are being removed and we're saying we're making the world a better place? We have to be very, very, very vigilant in what's happening to us right now. So no matter how you can sugar it up however you like, but it's still sour. That's what I'll say about it. You can try to sugar it up however you like, but it's still sour. And whether you believe it or not, whether you're one of the people who say, well, these things are good and they don't affect us, they will soon affect you. Because if you tell someone that it is okay to attack us in this way and we do nothing about it, then eventually you're under attack as well. And that your finances, your insurance, your the where you live at, the your house that you may have paid off years ago. So please don't think that just because these are the first things under attack that you're safe. We're telling you this is affecting your human rights, your
And
rights.
I think people are starting to actually see that, Tay. That is becoming very prevalent out there. Because not only is it just affecting certain things, it's affecting everything and everybody, whether it be from, their health care, like you said, their medical insurance, their personal insurance, how things are executed. So it's not just affecting a it does affect the marginalized communities, but this Project 2025 is affecting everybody as a whole, and everybody is starting to see it and feel it, especially with the recent changes and that have been made over the past couple of weeks. So
And
go ahead.
if you don't mind, Liz, and I'm sorry to talk across you, but these actions and policy changes, these are real life impacts. They are affecting real people, real everyday people. They're affecting it so much that we are looking at the working poor already, and now we have all of these other different things about to take place. And I'm looking more so toward it being a broader systemic consequences for marginalized communities. With all of the changes that are coming down the pipeline. So, and I know we have tried our best to talk about this. And for all of those who might say, well, I'm just going to sit back and see what the wall is going to look like because we tried to tell you, what do you have? What do you, how do you, encourage those individuals now.
Well, I think that it's important to educate those individuals, right? Because we can't just sit back and see what the world looks like. If they don't know, then at some point it's our job to show them or to tell them and to provide them with the information. And let them see, read, feel, and hear it for themselves as well. Because a lot of people haven't been impacted. Once they start to become impacted, it then becomes very real for them. And that's important. The reason why I wrote this report was to be able to educate, and to be able to show and have something, tangible for them to look at, hold, read, feel, right? So that they know that this is actually in place. These are not just words, these are facts that have been written and they have been presented to us and they've been available to us for over a year. And now we are starting to see that these things are coming into play. And we need to be able to stand up and fight back.
And I love when you say education. Whenever you say education, my ears perk up. And so in part of your report, you were talking about the civil rights, and that's what we're talking about now. I think it's important because when people sometimes, in my experience, when people hear the word civil rights, they start thinking black people. That's the first thing that you think of when you say civil rights, and no different with DEI. It's automatically, I think the majority of folks think black people. Although, yes, that's part of it. But the civil rights in its original form, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, since we're talking education, it prohibited discrimination based on race, color, religion, sex, and national origin. That's not just black people. It's prohibiting an action of discrimination. That's what it covered. That's what it started. So when you start attacking civil rights, pieces of the civil rights, you're piecemealing, you're pulling out, you're telling folks that they're not part of this, they're not equal, and that we can treat you any kind of way that we can. And it's not, it's just so many different people. The Americans with disabilities. I mean, it's so big here that the education piece on understanding civil rights and this whole Project 25 stuff, but it's just so valuable. So valuable. And thank you for even pointing that out in your report.
You're
And
welcome. You're welcome. And I'm sorry, Errol. It is important because it impacts the, like you mentioned, Reginald, civil rights in so many different ways, right? So voting, right? Vote with voter suppression tactics and things like that. So there's lots of things that we can do. I'm going to, Errol, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Did you want to jump in real quick?
yeah, let me jump in right here because it's something on me that and Reggie brought it out. He was saying about the Civil Rights Act and how when we hear the Civil Rights Act, it's garnered toward the first thing that we think of is Black Americans. Well, the reason that was written is because we just had Jim Crow. We had segregation. So, of course, you're going to have this act right here, but civil rights, and I say this all of the time, it's one of my backgrounds. Civil rights are everybody's rights. Human rights are everybody's rights. And our rights right now are being attacked. That's what it is. Our rights are being attacked. And I've said this, and I wish I had time to tell the story that goes along with what I'm about to say. But what we have to realize, if they come after women's rights, human rights ought to be there. If they come after human rights, LGBTQIA rights ought to be there. If they come after LGBTQIA plus rights, labor rights ought to be there. If they come after labor rights, civil rights ought to be there. And if they come after civil rights, we all must join together and fight like y'all know what I mean.
Amen. Thank you, Errol. Absolutely.
You're welcome. Go ahead. Go ahead. I know, and we need to jump over to the labor part because, I mean, we've got to get out of just thinking that this is not going to affect us. And it is going to affect us because it's already been stated that striking workers should be fired.
That's right. So Project 2025 will make the devastating impact on labor unions and workers' rights, right? We all know that labor unions have long advocated for fair wages, better working conditions, and job security, which could all face significant challenges under this mandate. The proposed policies would definitely weaken union power by restricting the collective bargaining rights and prioritizing corporate interests over workers' rights. That's exactly what we've been fighting against for so long, is making sure that workers' rights are prioritized over corporate interests. You know, with Project 2025, you know, there's also the language of the right to work laws, right, being the expansion. So it could push for the expansion of the right to work laws, which would allow the workers to opt out of unions. The deregulation of anti-union policies, challenges to public sector unions, and changes in labor laws. So labor unions would absolutely be affected and impacted negatively under Project 2025. You know, and unions made this country, and we need to continue working
You're
hard.
Absolutely right. Unions, the middle class made this country, and we're in the middle, and we're being fumbled. That's what I need to say. We're being fumbled.
That's right.
If you're the 1%, you get everything free. If you are poor, there's
nothing. That's what it is. When you're poor, you don't get nothing.
Nothing. Exactly. You know, and so
it's like a caste system, sorta.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, and as right. Reginald mentioned in my intro, you know, this might have been my first union job, but it's not my exposure to unions. My dad was in the union. I was born in the 71 strike. The union paid for my crib. I'm a union baby, and I am here fighting, you know, for workers' rights. And I will continue to always fight for workers' rights until my
right.
time
yes.
is up. You know.
And me too, because whose rights do we need to fight for to get these price of eggs down? What rights do those people need to take something? Whoever is impacting
no
the
comment.
Agriculture right now and the farmers, we need to focus on that, because the fact that eggs cost $18 is egregious. And
oh,
this is,
absolutely.
It sounds like a joke, but I'm very serious when I say, like, how do we come to an action to help our farm workers and our agricultural workers? Because I don't want to pay $18 for eggs. Eggs were one of those things where I feel like you like always, like, even if you were poor or, you know, just down on your luck, well, those are certain things that you could afford to have in your house. It's like eggs, milk, bread, those type of things. Listen, I don't feel like I'm not going to say I really can't technically, but I don't feel like I can afford eggs. I looked at some eggs yesterday and I was like, yeah, we're going to just have the bacon.
Pass on the eggs.
I used to buy them as a staple. I used to buy 18 count. Now I buy 12 count and I use them sparingly. But I'm thinking about buying me two hens.
Okay, because I'm like, listen, them brown eggs, I was in there looking at them, and I'm like, yeah, I want those brown cage-free eggs, but I don't know if I can do it.
Yeah.
Hey, in order to get some eggs, we might have to stop by those free hotel breakfasts.
But you all know, in real talk, Elizabeth's one of her subject matters is talking about the labor unions and women's rights, and workers' rights. And there's lots of stuff going on in the news right now. And I preface it with going on in the news and in the newspapers about the removal of certain people that were intricate to the labor movement. Several very, you know, top officials. Former CWA attorney, who was the National Labor Relations Board General Counsel, was removed. A board member was removed, and I don't know. It just seems like it's a lot going on. And then, of course, with perhaps potentially violating the contract or canceling contracts that are already existing for the federal government. So it's real. You can say
Yes.
that it didn't exist and that it's not real or you don't understand it, but you better start trying to understand it because the implications are real.
Right,
But I
right.
yes, you are absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. Reginald, thank you for the spotlight today of Liz Mercado. Liz, thank you for being, and we know this is your inaugural show today. So thank you so much, our inaugural time in coming on. You did
Thank you.
wonderful. Thank you so much. As
You
we
can
come down
come
to
back really quick. Like, you can come back to finish it because I know there was a lot that we had to discuss and we didn't get through the whole thing. So, whenever you feel like it, we are here for you. You can come back and we can finish this conversation because it was really a great one.
I am
Did you
honored
say
and
next
I would
week?
absolutely love to. I would love to
Did you
come back.
say next week?
Next week, maybe. I'll let you know by tomorrow.
All right. As we come down to the final minutes of the show, our Union brothers, sisters, and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette have been outside for 26 months, 2 years on the picket lines, and yet while they're striking, they are still churning out the news with facts for you and me. Let's show our support to them by making sure we subscribe to unionprogress.com. Once you subscribe to this free publication, how about going over and donating to their strike fund at cwa.org/PPG donate? And I just heard someone shout, "We are one." That's right. We are one. February is Black History Month. Take action and learn more today. When you take time to learn about others around you, you're making the world a better place. Awareness campaigns serve as a powerful reminder that there are more steps we all must take in looking out for loved ones, the people in our community, and those who have been impacted. It's time to take one big step together and make change. Don't forget, Save the Civil Service. Rally to Save the Civil Service. Join AFGE President Everett Kelly, members of Congress, labor leaders, and coalition partners to rally in defense on the nonpartisan professional civil service. When Tuesday, February 11, 2025, 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. at the lunchtime rally, where? Upper Senate Park, Constitution Avenue, Delaware Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C., part of American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. An hour is not long enough to be with you, and a week is too long to be away from you. You have been tuned into the CWA Human Rights Justice Hour Power broadcast. I hope something you heard today has inspired you to take action toward creating positive change in the world. Every person has the power to make a difference, no matter how small. And by working together, we can create a world where human rights are respected and valued. So I encourage each of you in the listening audience to reflect on your role in promoting human rights to effect change in your communities and beyond. Know that you are not alone in your quest for a more just and equitable world. When faced with injustice, it can be easy to lose hope and give up. But remember, justice may be slow, like the truth. But when it finally comes, it will stand. Until next Thursday, 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, right here on KYOK 1140 a.m. in the all-new 106.5 FM, KYOKRadio.org. See you next week.